Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, welcome. Great to have you with us on this Tuesday in the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Hilscher's General Store hotline open at 800-795-9565, powered by Hilscher's General Store. Go to www.hilscherstore.com. Hilscher's General Store is 7 miles south of Sealands Grove, Routes 11 and 15.
You know what I found there the other day? Remember the hamburger presses so you could have the perfect hamburger?
Yes.
I found one of those there.
That's great.
I mean, that's one of the really cool things that you can find there. I've been looking all over for something to make a nice little hamburger. We used to have one years ago made of Tupperware, and it didn't take long to melt. This one was not made of Tupperware, I might add.
You know, you take it out of there and you put it on the grill after that. You know that, right?
Wow. No. It was in the dishwasher, actually.
I see. One quick note for you. In all likelihood, you're going to hear about a Penn State basketball transfer. I cannot get into the details because it's technically recruiting. I can tell you, though, that it's someone who was already has his degree, would have 1 year of eligibility remaining. Thus, he would really, as a 6'3 guard, would take the spot on the roster of Jermaine Marshall for a year. Penn State was at 11 scholarship players when the day began. With the addition of this player, it would get them to 12, still one under the limit. And not only that, but this player would be done after the 13th season, which keeps the natural recruiting cycle going. Essentially, this player would be the guy I think they'd like to plug in to where Jermaine Marshall was going to be. But I won't get into names, where he's transferring from. But that, you know, this guy was a double-digit scorer this past season. And again, because of NCAA rules, I can't disclose the name or what school he's from until they actually release it. So my apologies, but I'm sure you'll be able to read up on it. Dave in Sunbury. Hi, Dave. Welcome. Great to have you on the show.
Hello, Steve.
How's life in the Dave world?
Okay. Well, I guess I'll have to check Thursday's Patriot to see who that individual is.
Oh, we may know tomorrow. When you show up for the show tomorrow, we may know tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I hate to do these things. I already know now. Well, it's exactly right because it's an NCAA violation. Although, what can they do? Put Penn State on probation? Just kidding.
Double probation, right?
Yeah, double secret probation.
tell Kevin, if you don't want Dominic Brown, my Dodgers will take him.
I mean,
Dodgers could use some help, though.
Honestly, Dave, I found it to be one of the more bizarre conversations on the air I've ever had yesterday. I mean, 6 weeks before you really can make a decision, he wants to take the best player and farm him.
And toss him.
I think it was a young Cuban that they had last night.
Yes.
That played so well. Right fielder?
He did play well. He played in right field last night, but that wasn't the big story of the game. I know they won 2-1.
Yeah.
Wild pitched very well, but they had to stop the game because a skunk got loose in the stands at Dodger Stadium last night.
Oh.
That's something you don't see often at the Ravine.
I mean, you don't see it often anywhere. I mean, I could see if maybe this happened at Isotope Stadium in Albuquerque, but not there.
Yeah. Oh, well. Maybe you got I-5.
That's right.
He's hitching a ride.
Bizarre.
Yeah. Well, are you a Boston Bruin fan?
It's an odd story for me as to how we get there. I grew up as a diehard Boston Bruins fan, okay? Bobby Orr, Phil Esposito, Johnny Busick, Kenny Hodge, Fred Stanfield, Johnny McKenzie, Jerry Cheevers, Teddy Green, Don Arie. Obviously, you can tell I was a diehard Boston Bruins fan. Then Orr retired, and the Whalers moved from Boston to Hartford. And I grew up in the Hartford area. I grew up 15 miles from Hartford. Well, then, you know, you start following the Whalers, and, of course, you know, they were in the WHA. And then the Whalers got absorbed into the NHL. And growing up in Connecticut, I can tell you right now, UConn basketball was nothing in the 60s and 70s. It really was not great. They had a couple good years, but for the most part, they were stagnant. Football, they were Division I AA. So we didn't really have any team growing up that was ours that we could root for. And then the Whalers showed up. And the Whalers in the WHA weren't bad. They got absorbed into the NHL. And suddenly you have a National Hockey League team. So the Whalers became my team. And then they moved to Carolina, which means that ended that. I was not going to root for the Carolina Hurricanes. I can tell you that right now. I've always felt that was highway robbery. And so now you're living here in Pennsylvania, especially in this part of the state. I really became more of a Penguins fan. But The Bruins have just brutalized the Penguins in every way, shape, or form because the Bruins have been precise. The Bruins have played their game. They have forechecked brilliantly. The defense has been great, especially Chara. He's been outstanding. And it's really made Tuukka Rask look great between the pipes because the defense in front of him has been so good. The Penguins, meanwhile, have really played a panic style of game. They've gone after them with the body in the first game, which really isn't their game. It's the game of Matt Cook, but not really the game of Geno Malkin or Sidney Crosby. And they've been using long passes, trying to long lead passes out of the zone, and it hasn't been working. It's almost like they've been playing a panic kind of game for some reason, and they shouldn't be panicking. Now they're in a position where they have to win four of the next five to get to the final, and at least two of those wins have to be in Boston.
Well, the guy that's on from 10 to 2.
Yeah, Dan Patrick.
Farrell.
Oh, okay, at night. Okay, Farrell on the bench. Yeah.
Farrell, yeah.
Yeah, he said, well, why don't you just pull the goaltender and have the extra guy on ice? Well.
When you give up that many goals, maybe it's, you know, maybe you don't need him.
Right now anyway, what's a 6-1 and a half dozen anyway?
Well, Dave, that's what happens when you're on for 4 hours. You don't say some things that are intelligent sometimes.
See, you have more prime time for tomorrow.
All right, we're looking forward to seeing you, Dave. We'll see if I can survive the round, all right? All right, Dave will be out there with us tomorrow. Greater Susquehanna Valley, YMCA, Bonnie Wasmer's group. Can't wait to see Bonnie and the entire group tomorrow. And also see our good friends from Sunbury Motors. They'll be out there. They'll be playing the afternoon flight. We're in the morning flight. We'll have the show live 3 to 5. Weather's supposed to be spectacular, sunny, 75 degrees, no hint of rain whatsoever. And, Kevin, I want to give you a slice of golf advice that I think is very important to tomorrow.
All right, okay? I'm listening closely.
Okay. Golf balls are a lot like Doritos. They'll make more.
Lose all you want, they'll make more.
They'll make more, all right? So, don't you know, we're not going to spend a lot of time looking for it, all right?
All right, that sounds like a plan. Hey, here's a question for you, talking about hockey. If you're the Penguins now, who do you put in goal? I mean, Bolkun did not look the best the last couple of games.
No,
but then again,
not.
Neither did anybody in front of him.
No, I would start Fleury in game three.
He gave up, what was it, 3 on 12 shots in the first period alone?
Yeah, Bolkun did last night, yeah. But Fleury didn't look much better either. But I would make the change now. And the reason I would make the change is this. When you change goalies like they did, you'll find this responsibility upon the shoulders of the guys in front of them because they feel they got the other guy bounced. And if this is a point where the Penguins need to tighten up their defense because their defense has been a porous sieve in the first two games of the series. So when you do change goaltenders, like I think they're probably going to, because this isn't Vokoun's fault. Vokoun, you can talk about giving up 3 goals, 12 shots. A couple things about Vokoun. He's also played more games consecutively than he's played in a long time, so fatigue enters into it. But I would start Fleury in game 3 just to make the change, and also at the same time, I think, to send a message to my people up front that everybody, the other 5 guys, had to play defense in such a way that makes his life easier. And almost like a put a personal responsibility upon them because they forced the change to happen.
Is it panic time in Pittsburgh?
Well, I say you have to win 4 of the next 5, and 2 of those wins have to be in Boston.
I mean, with the 6-1 game last night, I would think you have to be in a little bit of panic mode.
Well, if I had Geno Malkin and Sidney Crosby and Aginla, Neal, okay, Dupuis, Kunitz, if I, and, you know, and Letang, if I had that kind of firepower, along with Morrow and a couple of other guys, I don't panic. I don't panic. Your whole point is win game 3. See, what happens, and you bring up an interesting point, because you speak for the fan so often, all right? But when a team plays, it's all about game 3. Win game 3. You don't sit there and think about, okay, we got to win 4 of the next 5. You can't do that. That's why when I talk about certain basketball games as an example, how often have you heard Dick and I talk about you're in this position as a team, so the goal is, okay, let's win as many 4-minute increments as possible. Let's win each TV timeout.
Right, break it up into segments.
Right, so now you make it where it's negotiable. So for the Penguins, it's a question now, win game 3. You win game 3, that now changes the tone of what game 4 looks like. You also know if you win game 4, you've got 2 of the next 3 at home. The Penguins have been an extremely good road team all season in this short season. They've actually been a better road team than home team during the course of this. Now, they have to take that approach, but they're going to have to tighten up defensively without question. I think they start Fleury in game 3, not because he's better than Vokoun at this stage, but I think you do it at this stage because, as I've always said, they'll tell you when to make the change. Coach will end up being the one making the change, but the goalie tells you when to make the change. Well, last night I think we saw that Vokoun opened the door to making the change. He's played many more games in a row than he has played in a long time.
I just think Penguins fans are having a bad flashback to the Flyers series last year.
That happened a little bit in the Islanders series. This is a little different. This Penguins team is built to win now. That's why they made the Morrow deal. That's why they made the Aginla deal. I mean, they made 3 major deals to get veterans to win the cup now. That's where the part comes in about panic. I don't think you don't panic. You're not going to lose the series tomorrow night. But you do have the opportunity to get back in the series tomorrow night.
But I think you could be a little bit less, and I know you said don't panic. You could be a little less panicked as a fan if this team had actually put a shot between the pipes in the last 2 games instead of on them.
I understand that. But you have Sidney Crosby, Geno Malkin, Chris Kunitz, James Neal.
You would think that they'd be able to score.
No, but I'm saying the door is open. That group can explode at any time. It's not like you're going out there with less firepower and you really rely on your defense to win. And boy, if we can get a goal here or there and you're losing game 6-1, now you have a big problem. You're going out there with a team that has that kind of firepower that can put a 4 or 5 spot up like that.
Well, I looked up to find the bright spot. The Penguins dropped the first 2 games in Boston and 91 came back to win the cup.
Yeah, but that's irrelevant.
just trying to find the bright light at the end of the tunnel.
I know, but see, okay. Let me give you a Boston example. Remember when the Red Sox were down 3 games to win the Cleveland in the American League Championship Series in 2007?
Yes.
Players got together and they talked about their experience in 2004 when they were down 3-0 to the Yankees. And basically the theory was, hey, look, this was in Cleveland. Don't let us win game 5. And then Beckett went out, pitched a gem. They won game 5. Drew hit a grand slam in game 6. Pedroia homered in game 7. They beat Cleveland. They went to the World Series and they swept Colorado. That's where history comes into play when you have personally lived the history. Something that happened in 1991, Sidney Crosby was 4 years old.
I was thinking that as you were setting that up.
The word irrelevant comes into play.
I'm just looking at it from a fan standpoint, that's the bright light.
That's why when you hear, back in 1991, they did that. And these guys are like, look, if you personally live it, you can draw upon that experience.
Excellent point.
If it's in a history book, it's irrelevant. I heard Babe Ruth call this shot. I'm sure you did. So, I mean, as players, you can say, hey, look, we can come back from this. But you have to have the ability under yourself to come back. Game 3 means everything. That's the series for the Penguins right there. Game 3. Now, if you get game 3, now you know you only have to win one more in Boston. You get 2 more at home. Now, you know you have the weaker spot in the goal compared to how Tuukka Rask has played. But remember, it's not like the Bruins haven't been to the edge. The Bruins should not even be here right now, except Toronto blew it against the Bruins in Game 7 in Boston with a 4-2. They had a 4-1 lead, and they had a 4-2 lead with 90 seconds to go. Bruins pulled Tuukka Rask, scored with a 1:22 to go, scored with 50 seconds to go, then won the game in overtime. That's how close the Bruins were to not even being in this spot. So let's not act like they're the 1963 Montreal Canadiens. We'll come back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Ready for a quality pre-owned vehicle? Well, get them before they go to auction at Sunbury Motors. Go to sunburymotors.com and click on pre-auction blowout. Like a 2008 Honda Fit HB Mansport. Call for our lowest price promise, 888-536-8017. 2010 Chevy Equinox 4-wheel drive LT 13985. 2010 Ford Focus, reliable and affordable, just $13,997. 2011 Ford Escape 4-wheel drive XLT, just $18,877. 2010 Ford Roush Mustang 427R, a must see, $33,995. And a 2009 GMC Canyon Crew Cab. Call for a price, 888-536-8017. These deals won't last, so hurry in. All come with a Carfax report and our lowest price promise. Pre-auction blowout, 24/7 at sunburymotors.com, at the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at our dealership, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
Little Phil Collins. Great to have you with us. Phil Collins performed Easter night in 1996 at the Bryce Jordan Center. Matter of fact, first year of the Jordan Center open. Next half hour, story time with Steve. Dealing with the 23rd anniversary today of Penn State going into the Big Ten. 6 weeks between now, well, 5.5 till the All-Star break. Kevin, you last night on the show proposed trading Dominic Brown.
Not true. He said, I hope that doesn't happen.
We have witnesses. Kelly, Sean Carey, management.
And what I'm really hoping now is that everything is starting to come into play for the Phillies after last night.
They beat the Marlins. Okay.
I realize it's the Marlins.
But you have to do it. You have to win the game. You have to beat the Marlins.
How happy was McCarthy? Listen to this.
The 3-2 pitch. Ground ball towards shortstop. Rollins to his right. He's got it. Throws to first in time. And Kyle Kendrick has won 10 in a row against the Miami Marlins as he picks up his second complete game of the year. And the Phillies win it 7-2.
Sounded more like it was a no-hitter, though, didn't it?
No, to be honest with you, no. I think it sounded highly professional.
No, I agree. I'm not poking. I'm just saying, you know.
But Kendrick, let's look at this, though. Kendrick throws a complete game against the Marlins. He saves an entire night for the bullpen, right? That's the kind of performance you need. When I'm talking about the Pirates teetering on the edge, is that they have used up so much bullpen collateral because they're 23rd in quality starts. They don't have a guy that goes out there and saves the bullpen. Hamels can do that. Lee is having a really good year. Kendrick did that last night. That's good stuff. The question is whether they can find and generate enough offense to make this thing pay off. They're getting 2/3 of their outfield is giving them nothing offensively. I mean, 2/3. Brown has been obviously great. I mean, Brown's been fabulous. But they've got to come up with some more consistency because I think they're getting enough pitching to make this count. They have a good closer, and Lee and Hamels are really good up front, and Kendrick gives you a good start. Now and in the end, like last night. Again, in 6 weeks, where are they? That tells you what they have to do.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Hilscher's General Store hotline open at 1-800-795-9565. Powered by Hilscher's General Store. Go to www.hilscherstore.com and Hilscher's General Store located 7 miles south of Sealands Grove, routes 11 and 15. Also home of what makes the perfect hamburger.
I used it a couple of nights ago. It was symmetrical. It was flattened just the right way, and it works really well on the grill then. Oh, by the way, I found a couple of neat little things to add to your grill too. Can clean the grill with it, add some spices to the burger. All that at Hilscher's, by the way.
Well done. Time now for story time with Steve. Today, Penn State officially was voted into the Big Ten. 23 years ago today. Back in 1989, I was doing talk radio in State College. And I decided, and I did this once in a while, and you know, so we've had Dave Joyner on a couple of times, right? I've done, you know, where I'd have the athletic director on. So it was August of 1989, or July, I think it was July of 89, I decided to have Jim Tarman on. Jim Tarman is as nice, as intelligent, and as wonderful a man as you would ever want to meet in your lifetime. He's struggling right now, I'm sorry to say. But Jim Tarman, as a sports information director, as an assistant, an associate athletic director, and as athletic director, had a brilliant career at Penn State. And I love talking to him because I love talking about the issues of the day, and I love talking about moving intercollegiate sports forward and so forth, and that those kind of things he loved to talk about as well. So I have him on the show this one night in July of 89, and I bring up the topic of conference affiliation. Now, Penn State's been an independent forever, but you know, with Pitt and the Big East and the whole thing, you know, it's whatever. So out of nowhere, and I've done some research on it, I bring up the Big Ten to him. And I asked him, I remember specifically how I asked the question. I said, what about the Big Ten Conference? Is it on the front burner, the back burner, and is it the burner on high or low? And he gave me this look of, wow. I don't think he intended to, but I think it surprised him and caught him off guard a bit. And Jim Tarm is a person that you rarely surprised and you never caught off guard. And he looked at me and he said, I'll say back burner, and the burner would be on low right now. And I walked out of the studio that night thinking to myself, wow, it's on a burner and the burner is on. That's how I interpreted the answer. Filed it away. I get information in mid-December. It's going to happen. And I remember it was December 21st. It was December 21st of 1989. They had a press conference in which they announced that Penn State would be joining the Big Ten. And all of a sudden things kicked into gear. I remember that night flying to Birmingham. Penn State was going to be playing in a tournament at UAB's tournament, and the Atlantic 10 had put a deal together with the Sun Belt Conference so the Penn State-UAB game, which normally would have been the championship game, would be the first game it would be nationally televised on ESPN, which is a big deal for both Penn State and UAB. At the time, UAB was coached by Gene Bartow, Penn State by Bruce Parkhill. So we fly down, we get to the hotel in Birmingham. Who's waiting for us in the lobby but Ron Bertovich, whom I like Ron so much, the commissioner of the Atlantic 10. And he was going to make the trip anyway because, again, this was an Atlantic 10 Sun Belt ESPN game. And he says to me, he says, oh, this is a big mistake by Penn State, huge mistake. I said, Ron, I don't think so. I think long-term this is pretty good. You know, but Ron's trying to protect his turf, which I understand. So we go through this experience, and in the next few months, one story after another starts emerging about people that don't want Penn State in the conference. Oh, I'm thinking, this is great. And part of it was all done at the presidential level with some at the athletic department level, but the coaches were never informed about it. So now the negativity about getting Penn State in, playing with 11 schools, and blah, 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 blah. Finally, June 4th comes up, 23 years ago today, and they had the vote. And the vote is 6-3 in favor of Penn State. You need 7 to get in. You're saying 6-3. Well, I can tell you right now, Ohio State, Michigan State, Purdue, Iowa, Wisconsin, and Illinois, Stanley Eikenberry was the guy that really spearheaded this whole thing, all vote yes. Who votes no? The single most vehement no vote, unequivocally, was from Minnesota. Michigan voted no. Indiana voted no. That left Northwestern. Northwestern was the swing. Northwestern really wanted Penn State in the conference, but you're saying, well, why didn't they jump in right away? Because there was a fear on the part of Northwestern at the time that the Big Ten would be the Big Ten, and they, because of poor performances, were going to get kicked out. It wasn't until the other schools told them in no uncertain terms, nobody's leaving, we will play with 11. You are squarely and absolutely in. If you want it in writing, we'll do it. Well, Northwestern said no need, and they voted yes, and Penn State gets in by a 7-3 vote. Now, the next part was to stay in the Atlantic 10 for one more year because going rogue in basketball that time, not easy. Not easy going rogue in basketball now either. just the way it is. So now Penn State, after going through and being accepted by a 7-3 vote in the Big Ten, now needs to get to make sure there aren't seven votes to kick them out of the Atlantic 10. Well, as you would expect, the usual suspects are eager to kick Penn State out. St. Bonaventure, UMass, Rhode Island, George Washington, St. Joe's, and Duquesne. Right? Six. They have six solid, gone. Charlie Theokas, the athletic director at Temple, steps to the plate, votes yes to keep Penn State in. Rutgers steps to the plate, votes Penn State to stay in. West Virginia abstains. You need seven votes to kick. It's 6-2-1. Penn State gets to stay. So one more season in the Atlantic 10. The Lady Lions always won the Atlantic 10, so Rainey Portland takes the trophy, leaves. But the Nittany Lions in the Palestra beat Temple in the Atlantic 10 semifinals. Mick Kilgore called an ill-advised timeout that Temple didn't have. It was a technical foul. It swung at Penn State's way. George Washington, led by Mike Jarvis, beats John Calipari and UMass. Suddenly, Penn State is the 4 seed, and GW the 5 seed means the championship game is going to be in Rec Hall. Penn State's last ever Atlantic 10 game. When they finally play the game, Penn State blows GW out. I mean, they got out of the gate, got a huge lead. Most of the game is played between a margin of 15 and 25 points. You look at the final score now, you're like, well, they only won by 6, 81 to 75. Ellis McKinney hit a shot, a 3 at the buzzer, to take it from 9 down to 6. And it only crept to 9 when they put reserves in. It was a rout. And there's Ron Berdovich. Again, Ron is a great guy. I have nothing but good things to say about Ron. We've been friends for almost 30 years. There he is, the poor guy standing at midcourt handing the trophy to Bruce Parkhill. Bruce tried to take it, like, and Ron won't let go of it. No, I'm just kidding. No, Ron happily, with all class, handed it over. And I thought to myself, how about the irony of that? They accelerate this process of getting Penn State into the Big Ten. Because Penn State was not supposed to be in the Big Ten in football until 96. Well, they changed things around where they were able to talk to different people and get out of contracts. Notre Dame was the best. They called Notre Dame. They had 2 more games to go in the Notre Dame series. Notre Dame was like begging for Penn State to call because Penn State had beaten Notre Dame 8 out of 12 years. Like, they couldn't get out fast enough. It's so funny. And then everybody else, you know, slowly but surely, they got out of the other series. Some naturally ran out. The Syracuse series naturally ran out. The Pitt series naturally ran out. West Virginia series actually had 2 years to go on it. They never did make those 2 games up. And so Penn State gets in 93. They get in for 92-93 in basketball. They had to play 1 year as an independent in basketball. And then 92-93, they enter the Big Ten. And 93 in football, they enter the Big Ten. A couple years ago when Nebraska got in, I was on several Nebraska talk shows. And one after another, they would say to me, it is so great how we've been welcomed with open arms into the Big Ten. And my stock answer every time was, that's what happens when the vote's 11-0 versus 7-3. And that is Story Time with Steve. We'll wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. It's fun to stay at the They'll be teeing off on 2 tomorrow, the Village People. Looking forward to seeing them. Great group. And they'll be performing as well at the post-golf reception.
The post-golf reception and conference.
Yes, should be great. Looking forward to seeing them. A lot of fun. we're doing tomorrow's show on the patio, 3 to 5. We invite you to come out and just sit and chit-chat with us between breaks. If you have a question during the show, fine. If you don't, you just want to watch and chit-chat with us during the breaks and the news and so forth, great as well. We'll be at the Susquehanna Valley Country Club 3 to 5 tomorrow. The weather looks to be spectacular. It is a record number of groups from what we understand, with money going to help kids of the Valley. The Greater Susquehanna Valley YMCA, Bonnie Wasmer and her group do an absolutely outstanding job. And we're proud to be a part of this. That'll be tomorrow. Mark Mahoney will bring his A game. Drew Kelly, I thought, played very well about a month ago. And you just do whatever it is you do.
Well, hit it right down the middle.
I have never seen anybody hit the ball like that. Followed by 911. All right.
Down the middle.
That's Bing. Love Bing. Now, next week, we're working from the U.S. Open. What history Marion has. No flag sticks at Marion. Wicker baskets.
Yeah, you said that one other time when it was just you and I chatting. Explain that to me again.
When you there's the pole, and instead of a flag on top, they have wicker baskets. Back in the old days, they used to put the beverages in the wicker baskets.
Interesting.
Well, they've maintained that tradition, and the wicker baskets used to be made up until 1980. I think they were made actually on site on the course. Now they have somebody that they will never name, anonymous, that makes the baskets for them that are then brought in. Now, this is going to change how things are played at the U.S. Open. Now, some U.S. Open courses are 7,400, 7,500 yards. Marion is 6,850 yards. You can look it up specifically, but I think I'm pretty close. It's the East Course. I think it's like 6,850. The rich history, they have hosted 17 USGA events there, including the Open. But they haven't hosted the Open since 1981 when the Aussie David Graham won. And in 71, Lee Trevino won there. I hope we can work it out, but, I mean, that was a name dropped to me as a possibility of a guest when we're down there, Lee Trevino.
The East Course is 6,846 yards.
Okay, so I'm 4 yards off. Okay.
For those of you listening in Canada, 6,260 meters.
I was 4 yards off, so, I mean, you know, I
not
apologize.
Bad. Not bad.
It's a par 70. It's, you know, you're talking about a course that is 600 yards shorter than some of the courses that they play on for major championships. 600 yards shorter. 500 at the minimum shorter. But it's tight. And they use these wicker baskets. And the player sometimes will look at the flag to get a little feel on wind direction. They can't do that on this course.
Yeah, I'm going to put a picture of these on stevejonesshow.com so you get a chance to look at it. But I didn't realize
red wicker baskets.
Yeah, and they're enclosed. It's like a bubble on like a hot air balloon.
Enclosed? No, they're actually open at the top.
Oh, is it open at the top?
It's open at the top. It looks like it's the way it's shaped. Looks like it's enclosed.
Otherwise, you wouldn't get the beverage out.
Right. It doesn't. But that's just an old thing they used to do. It's not obviously what they do now. But they are made specifically for Marion and unique to Marion. And unique is a misused word. They are unique to Marion. And it is the course where Bobby Jones completed his Grand Slam by winning the U.S. Amateur in 1930. The famous one iron hit by Ben Hogan in 1950 was on the 18th hole, and there is a plaque that marks that spot on 18. Where you two can put the ball down and take out a one iron and see what you do with it. That one iron by Ben Hogan forced a playoff in 50. The history is deep and it's steep. It is also a major departure for the USGA to go back to this course after, with the changes in equipment, the changes in the golf ball, and the word that was used so often in the early 2000s, tiger-proofing a course by lengthening the course. This is not that course. You know the USGA wants very much for par to be the winning score. This is going to be a major test on a 6,846-yard layout with today's equipment, today's golf ball, which changed in 96, and today's pros, as well-conditioned as they are, that can hit it so far. What can they do with this? The rough is thick. It is penalizing. If you get the ball in the fairway, though, what will you do with it? Will you be able to fly the ball at the cup and make some birdies? I don't know. But to put it on a course of this length is something I have felt they have needed to do for a long time, that they have overreacted in the game with the length of golf courses, that you can do good things with a decent layout and today's pros. That length isn't the only thing that determines who's best. Accuracy will determine who's best. I'm so anxious to see this next week and to see how it plays out. Tiger Woods did play Marion for the first time in his life a week ago today. He went in last Tuesday, pair of cargo shorts, went out by himself, played around. It's the first time he has ever played around there. First time ever. Our thanks to Andy Russell. Our thanks to Jeff Tambroni. Tomorrow, Susquehanna Valley Country Club. Kevin and I invite you to come on out as our guests tomorrow. Enjoy the show. Be a part of it. Talk with us whenever you can. We're going to have a blast out there tomorrow.